And welcome to this, the first MGEV community podcast of 2024. So it must be the latest in the year. I've said Happy New Year to everybody. Streaming live on Monday, the 4th of March, 2024. We're here to discuss MGEVs, hoping to inform and entertain you for about an hour or so. I'm Dave Stewart, Dave S on the forum, currently driving the new style ZS Long Range. And joining us this week from Wigan, Les Burrows.
Hi, everybody. I'm Les Burrows. Same name on the forum. And I'm driving one of these two babies behind you, either one of them.
And please don't adjust your sets. Les is just back from a lovely holiday and is showing his Hollywood tan there. Also joining us from Devon is Tom. Good to see you again, Tom.
Hi, good to see everybody. I'm T Sedge on the forum, and that's my MG4 trophy behind me.
Brilliant. And joining us from sunny Swindon in England, Vince. How are you doing, Vince?
I'm great, thank you. I'm Vince Williams, Vince31 on the forum. I've got a Mark II ZSEV, had it for 2 years from new. Before that, I had the Mark I ZSEV, and behind me, that's my 3D printer.
And we're turning the homes under the hammer now, is it? Well, and joining us as ever from the Chorley Group MG, Innovation Development Manager, Miles Roberts. Hello, Miles, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks, Dave. Morning, everyone. Oh, good afternoon, everyone, even. Miles Roberts, CG on the forum.
Perfect. If you're watching us live, thank you for joining us. And please click on the like button and join in the discussion in the chat window. As regular viewers will see, we look at that quite a lot and take some follow up some of the threads there. If you're watching later, thank you for choosing to watch this video. And please subscribe and get a notification of when we go live next time. Quite a packed agenda for tonight's podcast. We're going to be discussing the MG9 and the MGS9. And we've got a new forum for each of those. They are quite different cars. The S9's a SUV style. And Miles has got a good bit of information about that. We'll also be looking at some of the hot topics that have been coming up in the forums for the specific marks, MG3, the MG4, the MG5, and of course, my beloved ZS. Before we go any further, a few premier members to thank. Sloucher, thank you very much. MGBT to ZS, thank you. Very Fat Bloke, I hope I haven't offended, but thank you. And EV Cog, thank you for becoming premier members. If you like what we're doing, please follow the link and become a premier member. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot of new activity on the market with MG coming up. First of all, Miles, the MG9 EV, have you seen it?
I haven't seen it in the flesh. So I didn't get to Geneva this week, but my colleague Adam went to Geneva and took photos and reported back. So last time we met, which was I think before Christmas, I think I mentioned that MG was talking about potentially bringing a couple of other SAIC brands to the UK or Europe and naming them as MG, because SAIC has lots of different brands. They have Roe, they have Rising Auto, they have IM, and they have lots of different other brands that they use, for the Chinese market. And for example, the MG5 was the Roe EI5 before MG rebranded it and launched as MG5 in the UK. So they have precedence for this. And at the Geneva Motor Show, they unveiled the MG9 and the MGS9. The MG9 is based on the Rising Auto F7, which was released in China last year. And in fact, actually, on the Geneva Motor Show car, when you looked in the footwells, the floor mats actually said F7 on them. So they hadn't done that much of a convincing job of taking out all the labels. They changed the bonnet and the boot, and that was it. Now, the Rising Auto F7 is a sort of larger than a Tesla Model 3, probably not quite as big as a Model S, And it's a hatchback, not a saloon, but it looks sort of coupe, saloony sort of shape to it. It's got frameless glass doors and double glazed windows and a panoramic full-length roof, and pop-out door handles and all that sort of stuff. And it's a very efficient shape. It's got a drag coefficient of 0.206. To compare, the Audi e-tron GT is 0.24. And in terms of sort of dimensions, it's the MG9 is 5 meters long. It's 5,000 by 1,953 by 1,494 millimeters. It's got a wheelbase of 3,000 millimeters, and it's available with either 19 or 20-inch wheels, both of which have Brembo brakes. The one they had on display at Geneva has a 90 kilowatt hour battery with a WLTP range of 313 miles. It's got two motors giving 400 kilowatts of power, which is 544 brake horsepower. And that'll make it obviously all wheel drive. And that does 0 to 62 miles an hour in 3.8 seconds. And interestingly, in China, that model is actually battery swappable, which is obviously requires you to have battery swap stations. But it is equipped for that technology. So it's quite a nice car, really. The interior of it has got a massive panoramic display across the dashboard. It's actually made of three different screens, but together it looks like one big sort of 43-inch display. It's got 10.25 inch driver's display. And then in the middle of the infotainment system, it's got a 15-inch display, which is an OLED display. And then in front of the passenger, sort of where your glove box would be, there's another further 12.3 inch screen for the passenger to watch films on or whatever whilst you're driving along if they want to. And there's also an 8-inch TFT screen in the back for rear passengers to do things like adjust the heated seats, adjust the climate control for the rear passengers. They can actually move the front passenger seat forward a little bit if they need to for more leg room remotely from the back. And that's all powered by a Qualcomm Snapdragon 8155 chips. It's very responsive, very quick, and it's running a dedicated operating system, which SAIC have done themselves. Apart from that, it's very minimalistic. So there's two cup holders, a hidden compartment with a wireless phone charger. But around the car, there's 16 different speakers. It's actually, if Stuart's listening, it's got 7.1.4 surround sound capabilities. And actually, they're talking about making it so that it's got noise cancelling as well. So it'll actually be capable of, like your Bose headphones, from actually, you know, isolating you from outside noise if you need to. Now, there's no word on whether MG is going to bring the MG9 to the UK as yet. We'd be hopeful for it. I think, you know, it's a very nice vehicle. In China, that spec that was on display cost $44,000 US, which would translate to around sort of £50,000 to £60,000, probably by the time they've paid the import duties and the tax differences that there is over here. Then they also showed the MGS9, which is based on the Rising Auto R7, which is a sort of SUV, a bit more sort of shape of a Tesla Model Y. But again, sort of size-wise, probably a little bit bigger than a Model Y, but not as big as a Model X. Again, a drag coefficient of 0.238, so less than an Audi GT, despite being an SUV. And the model they had on show there was a rear-wheel drive, 335 brake horsepower motor, which did 0 to 62 in 5.8 seconds. And that's using a ternary lithium battery with 90 kilowatt-hour capacity, a WLTP range of 333 miles, and again, battery swap capable in 2.5 minutes at a equipped station. Again, it's got the 43-inch triple-screen dashboard. And in China, it also has an augmented reality heads-up display system from Huawei, which can display across the entire windscreen, so it gives a 70-inch display area. Which then means that it's, you know, able to put, like, you know, your sat nav directions actually showing you on, like, turn left past that house, you know, on the screen. So that's the MG9 and the MGS9. And I think
Miles, are these almost on the same platform as the MG4, or is this a different platform, do you know? Because that doesn't sound like
It sounds very much MG4 like it's on the battery pack. Same sort of, I presume it's on the same MSP as the Cyberster and the MG4. The drivetrain with, you know, in terms of horsepower, sounds very similar to what's coming in the Cyberster with the all-wheel drive system there. So I imagine it's a similar motor setup and similar driveline setup. So the MG9 and the MGS9 are two potential things, and they obviously have the MG badges on them, but there's no word of those coming to the UK yet. But also on the stand, well, on the stand next door, was the IM cars. Now, IM is a brand which, again, it's a SAIC brand, stands for Intelligent Mobility, and it's a sort of premium brand for SAIC in China. The IM L6 was unveiled for the first time anywhere in the world at the show. And this comes with a choice of two batteries, either 75 kilowatt hour lithium ion battery, which has got a range of 372 miles WLTP, or, and this is the interesting one, 100 kilowatt hour solid state MOSFET battery with a range of 497 miles, which is an 800, well, it's 900 volt architecture capable of 394 kilowatt charge rate. So potentially you could add sort of, in 5 minutes, you could add 120 miles of range. So solid-state batteries are kind of, they're the sort of holy grail where manufacturers have been aiming for the last few years. There's been various talk about Toyota and so on, you know, saying that they were going to get there first with a solid-state battery. Well, this is actually a working vehicle which they plan to release. Now, the interesting thing about IM is that prior to the show, we got a press release saying that MG plan on launching the IM products in UK and Europe next year from sort of first quarter 2025. The understanding is that the IM products will be rebadged as MGs in Europe and UK because we have the brand's knowledge. You know, car manufacturers don't have a great experience of launching new brands in the UK, particularly at a premium price point. So things like Infiniti and Genesis and so on, you know, like Nissan's premium brand and Hyundai's premium brand, have never really done very well in the UK because they don't have that acknowledgement, that recognition there. So I think that if they launch under the MG badge, I think that, you know, if we think we've got the Cyberster coming this summer with, you know, sort of 50,000-60,000 pound price point, that's bringing a whole load of different customers to MG than what they've seen over the last 10 years, really, because it's a different price point, it's a different product, it's a premium feel. And I think that the IM products give an opportunity for MG to then further that sort of premium class of vehicle and have some options for people who are coming to the brand from, you know, Range Rover, Audi, and that sort of, you know, car mark. So,
a question, Mark, if you don't mind.
Please.
Quick question on the IM. Do you know if it would come with over-the-air software updates? You know, a step up from what's available on the current MG range. Have you any background, any information on that?
I have no information about that at all. I mean, I believe in China it does, but whether they can make that work in the UK with the different legal frameworks that the UK transmissions and things work on, the issue seems to be, and the reason why we've not had great success in this before is because basically Chinese brands trying to provide over the updates to vehicles in UK and Europe tend to have MI6 and so on sort of twitching their noses and going, you know, well, how are we allowing this? So I think that there's a chance that that might not happen. I don't know, okay. unless they can come up with some better framework for European servers, for example. Now, what was interesting about this IML6 is that David Ellison from MG was quoted by Auto Express magazine. David Ellison's the sort of product and planning manager for the new models. They're saying he saw it as a rival to the Tesla Model 3. Well, if it was going to be a Tesla Model 3 rival, it has to sort of be around £40,000 when it actually hits the UK then. You can't launch a Model 3 rival at £50,000-60,000. So they have a rear-wheel drive model, which is 216 kilowatt power. Or they have an all-wheel drive model, which is with the 100 kilowatt battery, which has got a rear motor of 379 kilowatts and a front motor with 200 kilowatts. So now combined, that's 776 brake
horsepower. Kilowatts, yeah.
So that's sort of thing where you put your foot down and the world goes the opposite direction, I think. I think if that's going to be around sort of, well, if it starts at 40 and goes to 50, 55 for the performance version, I think that again, you know, it's going to be a different, you know, you could, yes, you can buy two MG4s for that price. But I think potentially it could well steal some sales from say, your more premium brands.
Yeah.
I think that's, so, I mean, MG's got this ambition to be taken seriously as a, you know, as a, not only a car manufacturer, but as a brand that people will want, as you know, they want to actually have this brand. They want to have the MG as their, as a premium, you know, look at my, you know, my neighbors look at me, look at what I've got sort of car, rather than being known as just the cheapest electric vehicle you can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, guys? Well, there's two nice models there that Miles is
trying to think of ways of affording them. That's the only problem now.
That's the other thing, Sam, yeah. Altogether.
I mean,
but it's good to see, I can see where they're going with these batteries.
Couldn't you, Les?
Sorry?
So Les could sell both cars and consolidate down to one, you know.
Yeah. Well, maybe, yeah, but...
I'm just thinking with
these batteries you mentioned, I think what they're trying to get around it, they're trying to get to the situation whereby it's like pulling into a gas station where you just put the nozzle in the tank and fill it up in 5 minutes and on your way. And the way these charge, there is these 800 kilowatt charges are coming now. They're trying to get to that situation, which is just faster than a petrol car.
Yeah, so I mean, they'll do 497 miles on a charge, and in 5 minutes, add 120 miles, in 15 minutes, add 120 miles.
But you wouldn't be worrying about it anymore, would you? I mean, that
wouldn't in this country anyway. You certainly wouldn't in this country.
No, and what I think is good as well is the efficiency that this car seems to have, according to the figures there. Mm. So the MG9 was saying that it was, it was going to be a 90 kilowatt hour battery giving 313 miles of range. And this is talking about a 75 kilowatt hour battery with a 372 miles of range, or a 100 kilowatt hour battery with basically 500.
Yeah.
Mm. So if it's, you know, if it's able to get sort of 5 miles per kilowatt hour out of that solid state battery, and obviously the benefits of a solid state battery as well is, you know, it's not susceptible to degradation in the same way as a chemical based battery. It doesn't obviously require the same rare earth metals and things. So a lot of the arguments that...
And safety, isn't it? It's, there's no risk.
Yeah, the argument about, you know, lithium coming from here or cobalt coming from here or whatever else, if it's all on chips, it makes it a lot... I mean, there's a demand for silicon, obviously, but it's a lot... it negates a lot of those arguments. And, you know, it also gets over the speed of charging and things like that. So I think it's really exciting that SAIC have got solid-state batteries in a manufacturable state.
Does that mean... Because thinking about what you've said with the 9 and the S9, so with the current platform, they seem to go in jumps of 13 kilowatt hours for the battery. So there's 51 for the short range or standard range. There's 64, 77, 90. Yeah. So that all fits. But this clearly sounds like a completely different architecture with the IM. You know, a different chemistry, different design. Is that more of their sort of cutting edge, looking forward brand?
Yeah, so IM, the IM brand is made as a partnership between SAIC and Alibaba, actually.
All right.
So it's had a lot of investment from, you know, Alibaba, which is a major Chinese platform, similar to Amazon. For those that don't know. And I think that, it's exciting and interesting that we've got these options, you know, potentially that are coming and potentially coming, you know, within sort of 12 months.
The
next year is going to be very busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to need some bigger showrooms as well. So this showroom that you see behind me at Burnley doesn't actually have room for the Cyberster, let alone anything else. So we're going to have to extend because it's just not, we've just not got the floor space to be able to take on the different models.
That's been a theme with dealers, haven't it? MG's been encouraging smaller ones to close and larger sites to be created, is that right? In order to have place for the new models?
Yeah, basically because the ones, you know, when they only sold three different cars in the UK, the ZS, the GS and the MG3 originally, and they were all petrol cars, it was a different dealer system to how it is now when we've got the new MG3, which I haven't even mentioned yet, it was in Geneva, MG4, the MG5, the ZS, the ZSEV, the HS, the HSFEV, the Cyberster, potentially now, you know, two or three other models as well coming. We're going to get to the point where we need like a 10-car showroom, just the core models, which is getting more onto where sort of BMW and Audi are, really, in terms of their range. Mm-hmm.
The point
yeah, you made, they should be Miles, worried.
The point you made, Miles, about how MG want to move the perception of their brand up is great, but you know the price will have to go with that as well, won't it?
Well, so I think what MG is trying to do is, and this is partially if we come on to talk about the MG3, which I know is a hybrid, but I'll mention it just because it was at Geneva. So they plan to have different segments for different vehicles, and so. The MG3 that they're bringing out, which is a hybrid, it's a self-charging hybrid, if you want to call it, is longer, wider, lower than the current outgoing model. It's got a bigger boot. It doesn't mean you're going to get a nicer courtesy car if you're taking your car in for service. You probably usually get an MG3. Well, this is going to be a better car now. Interior-wise, it looks very much like the MG4. It's got a 7.5-inch driver's display, a 10.25-inch infotainment screen. It's got iSmart, it's got CarPlay, Android Auto, and navigation on all variations from the lowest spec upwards. Mm-hmm. It's got high-definition 360 cameras. It's got heated seats and steering wheel on the trophy spec. The hybrid can do 0 to 60 in 8.5 seconds. It's got a 1.83 kilowatt-hour battery capable of self-driving zero-emission driving up to 50 miles an hour. Which is better than Priuses and things. It's got three different driving modes, configurable regen, and it's going to be around sort of 99 grams of CO2 per kilometre. And the positioning is that it should be, so they showed us various cars on the screen when they did this deal launch. They said, look, you know, the Corsa ICE car starts at 22 grand. I think Peugeot 208 is around sort of 22 grand. The cheapest sort of hybrid-y sort of car is the best-selling one is the Yaris Hybrid, and that starts at £25,000. We think it'd be really good if the MG3 started less than 20. So they are still aiming to be very cost-competitive in each segment that it's in. You know, that it's not just going, they're not just making it, oh, yes, they're making it hybrid. And yes, it's going to be way more expensive than the original MG3. But the original MG3 was quite an old design and quite inefficient. It was a very old 1.5-litre petrol engine with around 150 grams of CO2 per kilometre. It was not particularly quick. I think 0 to 60 was about 13 and a half seconds. So they're making it significantly better, and by putting this hybrid drivetrain in, make it better. Part of the logic from MG on this is that... MG is one of the few manufacturers who actually can advertise the fact that they do cars other than electric this year. Because every other car manufacturer is panicking on how on earth they're going to hit 22% EV sales this year, which they have to hit for the UK's ZEV mandate. The fine if they don't hit that 22% is £15,000 per vehicle that they miss it by. Now, MG last year sold 40% electric vehicles. So it's in the rather... enviable position of being able to go, you know, we sell enough EVs to avoid this fine. We can actually advertise the fact we've now got hybrids. Whereas you may find other manufacturers, I saw a deal from Honda the other day on the ENY1. They were doing the ENY1. Now, the ENY1 is like a slightly bigger than a ZS EV. It's £45,000 RRP, electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. And they were offering it with an £8,000 discount and £8,000 deposit contribution. So over 2 years, PCP was £179 a month. So £179 a month, just to put into context, is less than what you'd have to pay for an old MG3 petrol. So ridiculously cheap. You know, you can't get a Hyundai i10 for £180 a month. You can't get a Fiat 500 for £180 a month, you know. So but I think Honda's done that because they've gone, well, we only really do two electric cars, the Honda E, which is very small, limited range, not many people want it. It's also really expensive. And we've got the ENY1, which also is quite expensive and nobody really wants it. But if we don't sell them, we're going to be getting a massive fine. So we might as well knock 15 grand off the price and sell some and get them out on the road than not sell any.
We're paying not 15 have grand anyway.
No, then you know, and then have the issue of we've got to find at the end of the year. So there's going to be quite a lot of manufacturers. I've seen that Toyota have been offering the BZ4X, which again is like a £40,000 EV for like £250 initial payment on Motability. You know, so it's a lot of cars are going, are being discounted, particularly to fleets like Motability, where you can't, where you don't sort of see the discount as such. But Honda decided to actually do it on a PCP, which is where you can see just how much money they're throwing at it. So yeah, I suppose that MG is in that unique possibility. It's able to actually, you know, launch a hybrid car. There have also been some rumours of other new cars from Geneva on the back of Geneva. So MG5. The talk is that that's going to be replaced by an MG4 Estate. Whether it actually is literally, as Auto Express have shown it, a boot welded onto the back of a MG4, or whether it's going to have a different design overall, I don't know. What MG said to us was basically that they were going to use the MSP, so the modular scalable platform, which underpins the MG4, to create a new MG5 and a new ZS. But whether aesthetically it will look identical to the MG4 or whether it will look different or whether it will be overall wider, bigger, longer, I don't know. Whether it be, you know, an MG5 in its own right or whether it will just be called the MG4 Estate, I don't know. And likewise with the ZS as well. So when the MG4 was launched, year and a half, 2 years ago, was it? It's not been around that long, has it? The MG manager, again, David Allison, said to us, by the end of 2024, the MG4 will be one of the oldest cars we've got in our lineup because we plan on refreshing everything else in the meantime.
Wow. And
so this is what's happening. So
I mean, that's pretty quick, isn't it? So MG5 this year. A new MG ZS this year.
Well, it's unveiled
this end of this year
in stock. You know.
Yeah, so, but I mean, it's been a year.
Effectively, it's going to be announced and shown this year. So I mean, you know, for us as an MG dealer, it's a really exciting time that there's going to be loads of new products. And I think there's, I think the brand can stand it. I think that, you know, they've established themselves now, and I think that the plaudits that the MG4 has won. From the motoring press means that we're no longer seen as the cheap Chinese entrant, you know, to the market. That we've actually, last year, a quick look at my notes here. I'm pretty sure we said that we were 11th. So I made like 400 pages of notes on my Kindle here. You can't, it's not screen up here. My Kindle here. So the plan for 2023 was that they'd sell 70,000 cars. They actually sold 81,280. So they beat the plan by sort of 37. So the plan was it was going to be a 29% increase year on year from 2022. It actually was the largest growth of any OEM. It was 59% growth. They came to 11th position, which puts them ahead of people like Renault and Honda. And I think it's knocking on the door of Skoda. Hyundai from memory. So, the plan is to be in the top 10 this next year. In terms of sales, we haven't had one of these calls for ages, so I meant to mention this ways ago. They sold 4,600 MG3s. They sold 21,700 MG4s. Only 2,200 MG5s. 8,049 ZSs, petrols. 6,780 ZS EVs, 23,000 HSs. So HS was the biggest selling model, actually. And the HS Feb sold 4,300. So,
HS is really cheap, though, isn't it? It's what you get for the money, the amount, the size of the car.
Yeah, and there's going to be a facelifted HS Feb coming this year as well. Which hasn't been unveiled yet, but it is coming. When are we going to see that? It's one of my 12 pages notes here. on sale from July. So that'll have a bigger battery, like a 75-mile electric range with a 22-kilowatt-hour battery. Do not. Oh, that's. I shouldn't have said that. Ignore that. That's. Okay. That's not
down to it. Done it again, everybody.
You're in trouble again, Miles.
You'll be getting that phone call.
Let's not draw attention to it.
So how are MG dealers going to cope? Because that is fantastic, but there's that is tons of new models, tons of new space needed. All those cars need supporting. I mean, what do you think is going to happen? Are there any schemes planned to help dealers expand and grow like that?
I mean, the good news is that MG is asking dealers to grow at a time when dealers have been selling a lot more cars. If they were coming to you and saying, right, we've planned to expand because we know we sold 10,000 less cars last year, and therefore we want to try and sell more different brands so that you got more to sell, it'd be a harder ask. But the fact that they've sold a 50% increase on the previous year means that dealers have been, in the main, doing quite well out of MG. So there have been road bumps along the way. You know, there have been some issues, and particularly with like parts availability, and you know, the problem of growing so fast and handing over so many more cars is that there have been issues with deliveries of parts, of deliveries of vehicles, perhaps things getting missed, registrations taking longer than they should do, that sort of thing. You know, that's sort of just part of the growing pains that we've had to experience, you know, as dealers ourselves. But for example, for Cyberster, which was again at the show when they unveiled various specs of it at Geneva, the order bank should open in March, with first deliveries due June this year. For Cyberster, they're going to have a separate area of the showroom, so it'll have like a wooden plinth sort of thing that'll sit on. It'll give it a high-end sort of clientele feel to the end. So rather than just walking in and sitting on the same plastic chairs, you know, it'll have a bit more of a sort of luxury feel to that part of the showroom. So they've currently going around doing all of the sort of design plans for each show. So each dealership is having an audit where they come around and they measure up and they basically plan how they're going to incorporate this Cyberster area into their showroom.
Do we have a price for that yet, Miles?
For the Cyberster?
Yeah.
There's no pricing been announced apart from the fairly vague 50,000 to 60,000 that was talked about before. There's going to be two models. There's going to be a but they're both trophy. So they're basically there's no low spec and high spec. You've got trophy and trophy GT. The only difference with GT being that it's got the additional motor and it comes on 20-inch wheels rather than 19s. So if you go for the,
so they're not going with an X Power branding.
No. So if you go for the single motor rear-wheel drive, it's 250 kilowatts, which is 320 horsepower, 0 to 62 in 5 seconds, and has a range of 308 miles from a 77 kilowatt-hour battery. That comes with 19-inch wheels, a fully electric hood, scissor doors, Brembo brakes, branded audio system, auto park assist. If you go for the dual motor all-wheel drive version, that has 400 kilowatts of power, which is about 530 brake horsepower, 0 to 62 in 3.2 seconds and a range of 278 miles. There's going to be 5 exterior colours. There will be 2 hood colours, either red or black, but at the moment the UK is only getting the black hood for launch. So if you really want a red hood on your car, you have to wait a bit longer, I'm afraid. And the choice of 2 interior colours, one is grey and sort of light grey, dark grey, sort of two-tone. And the other one is red and black. So it's, we're not getting the all red interior that you may have seen on Chinese vehicles. And that was also, Les, when you came to the showroom, that red interior that you saw there isn't going to be on the car. It's going to be a red and black dual color interior. Hopefully it should turn it down a bit. Because I think that, lovely though the interior was in terms of fit and finish and feel, I think that it was a lot of red to take on board.
A lot of red, yeah. Mm. Please, the wife. She loves red.
Yeah, but I think that the two-tone should look nice. So I've yet to see what that looks like in the flesh, but we have placed our orders now for our demonstrators, so hopefully they're going to come in the next couple of months.
But presumably you're going to need a space for the IM range as well, or maybe even the 9. And
And that'll be next year. So it's just, it's how we, but so if IM gets rebranded as, say, MG6, for example, or, you know, MG7, it might end up for the UK, then I think that it'll probably sit in that side of the showroom, probably next to the Cyberster, but it, you know, obviously it would be branded as MG, but I mean, it's an interesting time. The 2024 is the year of the dragon for the Chinese, and the dragon is a hybrid animal made up of part lizard and bird and whatever else. And I think that MG is a sort of embracing that and saying that they're not just a one trick pony. They don't just do the MG4, or they don't just do, you know, cost effective crossover vehicles. They can actually do a wide range of different things.
I mean, I'd be terrified if I was, like, you know, VW or something. How much is coming out, how quickly, and covering such a range, and going up high end as well to the high end brands. I mean, it's all going to be competition that they haven't had.
Yeah, I mean, for example, you know, we have within group, we have Kia, Hyundai, Citroen, Vauxhall, Nissan, Aura, you know, your Stellantis brands like Vauxhall and Citroen, they're trying to scale to, you know, launch new models all the time. There's the Citroen C3 Aircross, which is supposed to come out shortly, which is electric, which is going to be talking about a £20,000 sort of price point for that, which is, if and when that does come in, that would be a good competitor for something like an MG4 SR. But yeah, it's just the speed at which the Chinese can get to market, and you know, the fact that they've got these cars physically available in China at the moment, and they literally just need to slap a badge on, admittedly swap the side of the steering wheel, but, you know, there's very limited things they need to do to actually get it to market, whereas it seems that a lot of the more major brands or more traditional brands that have just been caught napping, really. And it's not like we've not told them for the last 10 years that they need to get on with it.
Yeah. I think the biggest one of them is Ford, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that a lot of mainstream car manufacturers, Nissan, for example, have stopped production of the Nissan Leaf because they want to switch the factory over to do the new Leaf, which hasn't been announced yet, and an electric Qashqai and electric Juke. And so the only EV that Nissan really does now is the Ariya, which is a really expensive upmarket SUV.
Yeah. Was
great when they thought that everyone had loads of money and, you know, financing was cheap and we were going through the boom years and, you know, everyone wanted big, expensive SUVs. But a lot of people now, myself included, are looking at where they can shave costs. And if you can do what you need to do in a car which costs £20,000 rather than £40,000, you'll try and do that, won't you? So I think that I think MG will always have to be a cost-effective option at whichever brand it's in, you know. So the Cyberster, obviously, it sounds expensive to us because we're used to MG4s and MG5s and ZSs, which were sort of typically sub £35,000. And this is going to come in at £50,000-£60,000. But if you're looking at, you know, your Porsche Boxsters as a sort of comparison point, the petrol Boxster starts around sort of £55,000-£60,000. And the electric Boxster won't be anywhere near that, would be more like sort of £80,000-£90,000. So then it still is a cost effective option within that bracket, you know. As long as MG doesn't forget that, I think one of the reasons why the MG5 facelift hasn't sold as well as the old model is because the old model was discounted to like 23 grand typically, and the new model was more like 30, 32.
I mean, the other thing,
I think the MG5 sold so well is because it was. Not because necessarily it was the first EV estate, but just because it was a family sized EV with a decent range that was very well priced.
Yeah.
Yes. The other thing is that buyers coming from, I don't know, Audi, Porsche, whatever, are going to have different expectations of service. Potentially a problem if you've got parts delays, if you've got bugs, if you've got difficulties with updates, if you've got a dealer network that's struggling to expand. that could potentially be a pitfall as well.
Land Rover Jaguar, then they'll be well used to things breaking down and not being fixed.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't mention them for a reason.
They just still jail our customers. They'll be fine.
Good point.
It's also a point where MG needs to invest lots of money internally in getting those processes better oiled than they have been.
So that's a good bit of time looking forward, guys, to the new models, new marks that are coming. So, Tom, I know you've done a fair bit of work on existing models and marks and how they're going down, on what the topics are in the forums. So should we kick off looking at that? And if you own one of them, please chip in with what your observations are as well. So, Tom, can I hand over to you? What brands are you, what mark are you going to start off on?
Yeah, I've had a look through the forums, see what's been going on lately with the MG4, MG5, ZS, and sort of general issues. I'll start with the 4, which also the one I know best because I've got one. A survey went up a few months ago with now about how people are finding their MG4 and whether they're happy with it. We've got 358 votes at the moment. 80% are enjoying it. Around 30% are sort of up somewhere in the middle, and 7% not enjoying it. And I think I make that point also because it's easy to go on the forum and see people asking about help with a problem. And, you know, obviously that's where people turn when there's a forum, they want to get some help. But also there's a lot of people who are there driving around quite happily with their cars of whatever type, who are not saying, I'm having a great time, your car still works. That's a sign that there's generally a good satisfaction. Specifically on the MG4, there's a few points I just want to run through. So a number of people have had problems with the under tray. I think, Les, you had problems, didn't you?
I've got problems. It's going in, my wife's car's going in on the 16th of this month for a replacement on the tray.
Okay.
When that gets done, it should be okay, I hope.
Yeah, let's hope so. There also seems to be a metal brace or bar has been created and fitted in Australia as a fix for a sagging under tray. So the general problem that people have is that parts of the under tray sag because of the design. I don't know if this is going to come to the UK or not, but it's now being fitted to Australian cars, all new Australian cars by default. And it does appear to solve the problem. But I mentioned that just because I know some people have still got problems with under trays like you, Les.
Miles, can I ask, when you speak about Australian builds, were Australian cars being made in a different factory altogether from the UK and Europe cars?
No, the right and drive models were all made in the same factory, Miles.
All right.
Now, we haven't had any communication from MG as to what to anything to do with the brace or anything like that. There's no solution like that being mentioned to us as dealers. Les, you've got a new under tray coming. Let's see how that one
fits. Yeah, 16 to this month, it's going in for having a new under tray fitted.
Yes, we'll see how that fits, see if they've improved
See how it fits. There's a couple of people who's had them done on the forum, and they are better than what they were, but still slightly bulging in parts on one or two of them I've read on the forum. I'm a little bit behind at the moment because they say I've been away and all, I've just come back. But there was quite a few before I went to who said they've had them fitted and it's still bulging a little bit at one point, but not as bad as it was. So I don't know. I don't know how it goes. I'll see how ours goes when we get it sorted out on the 16th. Mine's, the wife's, it's quite bad, actually. It is quite bad. And has been since we've had the car.
Yeah. I think it's the... I presume it's the tolerance that's basically wrong. It's, you know, when you put it together, the holes that, you know, where they line up or whatever... It seems to be that it's effectively creating like a sag, isn't it?
It's like a bulge in the middle. There's several people I've read about who's trying to get round it in different ways. I've read about the one in Australia with the bar, but I just think that's a workaround. That's not a fix. There's several people tried removing the tray and elongating the holes so it would line up better with the holes. You know what I mean? Make them a little bit longer. And they've done it that way. It seems to make an improvement. There's different things, but... Really and truly, the replacements is what we've been waiting for. It's been a long time coming, but it's coming, and it's coming on the 16th of this month at Jolly Branch. So I'm quite pleased with that. Hopefully that'll be right when it's done.
Yep. Hopefully that will sort things out.
Yeah.
Moving on from the under tray, people always ask about software versions. The latest that I'm aware of for the SE model of the MG4 is release 33, which apparently seems to be very stable and fix a load of long-standing issues. It's been out for a while. For the trophy model, it's release 40, which is on general release, or 46 being fitted to some people. The reason I understand from my dealer as to why we don't all get 46 is that it can cause problems with some cars, so they only MG only release it if you've got specific problems that require a fix from release 46. And yes. I've been hearing about a 58 allegedly rumoured to be coming, which will be a new update for trophies. Miles, do you know any more about that?
No, frankly.
Okay.
As I've perhaps mentioned before, MG don't give us any sort of change log to let us know that they've changed a version of software. We just go on the server and see that it's there. So it's, and they don't actually tell us what they've improved between versions, which is really unhelpful. So, we sort of find out as and when we go on the server, and we don't get any, unless there's a bulletin put out, which isn't usually for a software version, where there might be, if it was a recall to fix a certain particular point, you know, then potentially might do a bulletin and let us know. But no, we've not had any communication. So the last updates, as I say, I haven't heard about the new 56 version. As far as I was concerned, it's 40. But we'll see how we're see what happens with that. I mean, this was one of the biggest things that I said, you know, post this dealer conference. I actually sent a big long email to the after sales manager and just said, it's just not good enough, guys. You know, no matter, you know, when you get your mobile phone says it's got an update software, there's a change log and it tells you what's changed. And if something doesn't work, you've got a chance of potentially rolling back to a previous version or whatever, removing the updates. But, you know, we're being asked to, you know, by often the customers, the only way we'll find out is new version of software is because someone on the forum will say, I've been into my dealer and had an update done.
Oh, I got this
version. Version 53 or whatever. And we go, are you? Yeah. Because we've not been made aware there's a new version. So it's clunky the way that sort of updates are done. And I have to say, it's something that MG does need to address. Going forward, with premium brands, it's something that needs to be addressed because it's just...
Definitely, 100% needs to be addressed, yeah.
I think across the board, I mean, people expect it now. Yeah. But okay. So that's where we are with the software. A couple of updates on charging issues. So there's two different charging issues that I've become aware of from the forums. One I've had, which is the AC charging issue. So this is where the car won't charge on a Type 2 charger. So it won't charge on your wall box at home or a public charger. It is, But the car, if you have this AC charging issue, you'll find that the DC charging, so the public rapid charging, still works with a CCS plug. Mine went in and was diagnosed very quickly as a CCU fault. So they ordered a replacement CCU, had to wait about eight weeks in total before it came in and I could have an appointment to fit it. But I think there's been a whole load delivered to the UK. So that delay wait time should have
reduced. I spoke to Martin Seaton, who's the sales manager.
Now I've had it.
Like 90 of them.
Yeah, so the whole bunch have come in, which is great. There is a problem, though, which a number of us are getting, which is that it then doesn't obey the charge limits. So if you set a charge limit of 80% on a trophy, I should say, by the way, this appears to only happen with phase one or model year 2022 trophy or SE long range cars. But with this fix, if I set a charge limit,
accident to start with.
Yes, I think they all had the same make or batch of charger or same model of charger. That's the difference. But anyway, it now just charges up to 100% whether or not you set a limit. So I've got it going back into the garage next week for them to have a look at that. I've heard also there's a software patch from it. But going back to our conversation just now about the software releases, the garage said, well, the problem is we can't search that. We don't see those patches. We have to go back to MG with the diagnosis for each customer's car. And then they might say to us, there's a patch available that you can use. But they don't have a way of seeing what patches there are. So there's a kind of lack of transparency between MG and the dealers there, which is
frustrating.
It's a bit frustrating.
It's for us, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, our guys, because often, like I say, again, Tom, you'll probably have better knowledge than this than our guys, because your car, you'll get your garage will, you know, get this information from MG, they'll pass it to you. You go on the forum and say it, and then somebody comes into our showroom and says, I believe that, you know, there's a patch for this, and we have to go through the same rigmarole of going to MG and saying, this is the VIN number, this is this, here's a diagnostic VDS report. And you go, yes, this is it, install this patch.
Yeah, and indeed, I mean, one of the great things about my data is I can talk to the technicians when I take the car in and talk to the person who's actually going to work on it, which is great. But they frequently say to me, bear in mind, we don't have an EV. We don't have an MG EV. We don't use the app. We work on the cars, but we don't own them ourselves or have access to them. Mm-hmm. Because obviously the dealers have a limited stock, and the sales guys will get to use the cars if anybody does, or they'll be out on test drives and etc. Anyway, so I think I'll get that resolved, but that's just that one. There's another one that's emerged, a DC charging issue. So this is the opposite. It won't rapid charge, but it still will charge on a Type 2 at home more slowly. This one is a bit, it seems that it might be a software update needed, but it's still early days. We haven't really figured out whether or not there's a hardware problem there. But just so people are aware, there's forum topics on both of these. If you have a charging problem, please seek them out. And also, there's still on the X-Power, there's still people looking into this vibration. I know we've talked about before. People have tried all sorts of things, the steering damper, which doesn't appear to do much from what people say. Some people have had their wheels balanced and tires replaced and found it improved. Recently, somebody mentioned warped brake rotors as the cause, diagnosed by their dealer. Yep, and had them replaced. And some people are looking into the balancing of the drive shafts, whether that's the problem. It's very weird because some people don't get it at all, and some people get it, and it quite noticeably, and no one seems to know exactly what the cause is of this.
I had the Model S in stock a few years ago now, and that was driving slightly fine, no vibration, and we'd let it go out on a test drive, and it came back, and the guy complained of really bad vibration, and we drove it, and we're like, oh God, yeah, it's got a bad vibration, what's going on? And it was the brakes that had overheated, and this guy had been on the test drive, basically just, you know, testing out the performance of it. It's, you know, accelerated up to maximum and then stamped on the brakes and overheated the brakes. And it Tesla Model S actually cost us, I think it was £1,200 for Brembo discs.
Right.
They weren't.
Wow.
That was the only way to cure the vibration. But I do wonder with the X-Power whether possibly people, you know, pushing the envelope of the performance on, particularly on newer cars which haven't been bedded in properly. So I'll hold my hand up here. We were guilty of this when we did our first video review back in August, was it last year?
August last year.
Yeah. We took it to a car with 100 miles on the clock to the Three Sisters racetrack, Wigan, and drag raced it all afternoon. And then we sent out a drift car driver in the car to set a hot lap and see what he thought of the car. And he came back with the smoke coming out of the wheels. So I wonder if potentially people, you know, if people are driving it, particularly as well, I think, when we've come into this colder weather, where the brakes will be very, very cold, and then suddenly maybe heating up very quickly, and then possibly splashing through cold water again, which might cool them a bit too quick, whether that could, like you say, could induce a warping, and then whether that could be an issue. But there's nothing official come through from MG yet. There's no, yes, we know about this, or anything, you know, that's come from them, so I can't comment further. I'm just thinking back to that Tesla and thinking, well, yeah, that does sound reasonable.
Yeah, it's plausible that might work for some people, but I am hearing people say it from new, from delivery. But who knows? People are still investigating it. Mm-hmm. Last thing on the MG4, Bernie's mentioned on the chat that a number of people have got water in the boot and are trying to understand the causes of that. I think possibly it could be seals or problems with the rear lights.
Yeah, I mean, so anything on that, Miles? There's only limited ways in which water can enter the boot. Usually it's from the rear hatch, and it'll be water that's tracking down the boot seal and then not sealing properly and getting in somehow. I've seen it where we've had cars where some of our branch, well, Chorley I'm thinking of, has got a lot of pine trees overhanging the forecourt. And if those pine needles get into the sort of, you know, the boots when they're open or closed, whatever, that can cause, it can sort of track in through that. Because it causes like a sort of syringe effect down through the seal. Yeah, I mean, if you've got a leak in your car, if you've got dampers in your car, take it to the dealer. What we usually do is basically strip the boot out, and then we dry everything off, put a hose pipe on the back of it, and try and see where it's leaking in. And sometimes it has to be that it's the car's at a certain angle. So if you notice that it only seems to rain in when your car's parked on your driveway, and you normally have your car parked with your nose facing down the hill or up the hill or whichever way it is, kind of mention that to the dealer, because if they're doing it on a flat floor, it might be that the angle's not right for the water to build up in the position that it would do normally on your driveway. Yeah. So any help you can get with diagnosing faults like that, but we have it on all brands. It's not just on MG. They're pain to find.
Okay, yeah, understood.
Just before we move off the MG4, Nigel's asking if there's going to be an ICE MG4 introduced.
They did say that there is a plan to there is a plan for a pure ICE version, I think, in the future, but I don't know when. And to be honest, I think that given the way that if the MG3 hybrid is priced the way that it is, sub £20,000, I think that the other one has to be very cheap for it to be for people to be keen on it. Really, I suppose, unless people are, because it is going to be obviously a full auto gearbox, and it's got a drive mode selector like the MG4 as well. So the interior basically looks like an MG4. You've got the same little sort of shelf with a little rotary dial on, same two screens. So if people desperately want a manual gearbox, then I suppose that'd be the only reason to go for petrol. But I'm hoping we get hands on our demonstration car within sort of the next month or so. I'll do a video review and see how it is, because I think it's where we are at the moment with the UK charging network. I think that not every single car can be EV yet. I think that, there will be a demand for hybrids in the interim. So I think it makes sense to have a cheap car that's a hybrid.
Yeah,
because you've still got the problem with people who can't charge at all, but people who've got to go to a rapid charger all the time, or got to go to a shopping centre or whatever, because they can't charge at all. They've still got that problem. And it's going to be a long time getting around that problem, I think. And that's for all models, for everything.
Yeah.
We still got that issue. Lots of people still can't park their car at all and then charge it.
Yeah.
So, just one thing, Tom, if you don't mind, before you go off the MG4, you're about this water in the boot. I've not been in the boot today, I must admit I haven't, but last night, when you got home late last night, and this morning I went out, and I noticed that I've had this before. I'd actually put stuff on the forum about it about 12 months ago. The lights was absolutely full of condensation. It's not been moved for 2 weeks.
I can tell you what that's about.
You've been weeks.
You've been away on a cruise, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah. And the lights, lights was absolutely thick with condensation.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't been in the boot, whether I've got in the boot or not, I don't know, but it's not been moved for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But I was told 12 months ago, this is common, this is normal, and there's drain holes or something. Not that I've looked for them, I must have been. But it's been okay all summer, but then we've just come back. It's been very cold, it's been very wet, and we've got a lot of condensation in the rear lights. I haven't been in the boot, so I can't comment on that.
Yeah, what tends to happen when cars are left is that, obviously, with the cycle of the sun and the cold and the warmth, you get condensation inside.
Yeah, that's where you're going to get it from.
It's quite common when people come back from a holiday that they find, this car's misting up and steaming up and the lights are fogging up. And that's just all the condensation that's built up that's cleared if you put on the AC for a while and dry it out.
Yeah.
So I would imagine you're probably seeing an effect of that. Because if you had a leak, it would be quite wet and you'd know about it.
I've not been in the boot. I just noticed the lights. I've not been out in that car today. I was going out in the 5 and I noticed it was there as I passed it. Mm. I've had it before and it's cleared. But it's been stuck for 2 weeks, and hopefully, it'll get used tomorrow. Hopefully, it'll get clear.
And it may have been, left not much sun on it, for example, for a couple of weeks.
It has. Yeah.
Doesn't sound anything out of the normal to me. Okay, let's move on. So, talking about the MG5. three main things I could find people talking about on the forum. One is the Tesla supercharging, which I know we've spoken about before, Les. There's some new updates for the facelift cars, and I believe pre-facelift long-range version has an update. So if anyone's got an MG5 and have been struggling with Tesla superchargers, it might be a good time to talk to your dealer about if there's an update available. We've also had radio problems. Some people have had the radio module replaced. Others have had software updates that fixed that. And there's been problems reported for some people with the auto lights going out or the beams flashing main beam when they shouldn't, which again sounds like software gremlins. I don't have a fire, but does anyone here have any comments on those issues or any?
Well, I can only say that I've had two MG5s now. I've never had no problem with the lights. Not that I've noticed, anyway. The Tesla supercharging issue, first off, I want to say a big thank you to Miles, because it was Miles who sort of kicked MG up the arse and said, come on, get this sorted out. And a lot of owners are very grateful for that, myself included. Mine's not been done yet. It's not getting done until the 21st, I think, of this month it's going in to be done. But yeah, I've had no problem with the lights whatsoever. No, I don't ever remember having a problem with the lights in any way, shape or form. No, nothing. Well, the Tesla supercharger issue, now it is available, as okay, thanks to Miles. The fact that there is one available, and if you do want it doing, you go and see your dealer and they will do it free of charge, I believe, according to the letter that I got from MG. There will be no charges. At first, well, it was not.
The key thing for us there that was difficult getting arranged was, and I think we talked about this last time we were on the call, was that there was this disconnect between us knowing that there was a fix available, customers knowing there's a fix available, MG knowing there's a fix available, but nobody wanting to pay for the time in the workshop for the fix to be done. So initially MG was saying that
it got sorted.
Effectively new versions of software weren't, they were added features were not necessarily covered under warranty because they weren't designed to have that when they were first new or whatever. That's no longer the case with regards to things like the Tesla superchargers. So it was, I made quite a good argument as to why customers would rightly, and I had this same issue myself. So I went down to, then went to Trentham Gardens, superchargers plugged in my MG5 I was in. MG5 it was, and it wouldn't work. The guy next to me was an MG4 and his worked fine. His works, the software, so MG can't claim it doesn't work. It was working MG4, would work on the MG5.
My wife's MG4, I've used that on Tesla supercharger a couple of times.
That's the frustration, is that you get to a Tesla supercharger, it was 63 pence per kilo, whatever, it wouldn't work. I end up charging on the motorway at 80 pence per kilowatt. And it's just, so it's a financial reasons as much as anything else. So, glad we got it sorted. Yes, speak to your dealers. They should now be aware. It's now an EVCC and BMS update that's required for Tesla superchargers.
Yeah. Thank you, Miles. Thank you very much.
Hey, any other comments on those MG5 issues? Okay, we'll move on to MGZS then. I couldn't find a lot. I mean, a lot of people seem very happy with their ZS. There is some reports of DAB radio issues. I think Dave knows about this one, that many people have fixed with the reboot of the car.
I borrowed a ZS to go down to the dealer conference, and it hadn't had any software updates because this was still at the time when we were arguing with MG as to who'd pay for updates. And so on PDI, they hadn't had any software updates, and the infotainment system hung three times on the journey down to Watford. So in 3 hours, like once an hour, which was not ideal when you're going on roads you don't know. And then we had an issue where basically it was on radio two, and we said, let's change to radio one. And the display changed, but the music still stayed on radio two. And then you could change it to Capital FM or whatever, and it was still staying on radio two. There was nothing could get it off radio two, short of a reboot. So those sort of gremlins are fixable with the later version of software, as Tommy said before about the R44. That software version can be seen within the car. It's the only software version you can actually see as a user in the car if you go to settings and see the version number for software. So yeah, that's the
The only other, well, two other things that are bad with the radio, Miles, is even though I've got it set to follow the station as you drive through the country, it doesn't. You know, like I'm on radio BBC Scotland, yeah. Highland.
Yeah, yes.
Drive through Tayside and to get down to Glasgow or Edinburgh or whatever, and it should automatically follow on, and it never does, which is a bit annoying. And I'm not sure if I've ever mentioned it before, but it really irks me that you can't stop it, Les. You can't switch the radio on and off. God, for goodness sakes, it's crazy.
Yeah. Please fix this radio.
I'm not expecting Mr. MG to come and sort it, but come on, guys, 21st century, switch off a bloody radio.
Yep. It sounds like
when you get out of the car and it's still playing until you lock the car, yeah.
Tom,
you can't, actually. There is no off switch for the radio. You've got to turn it down to mute.
Yeah. I'm going to mute you there, and Vince has got something to say.
Yeah, my ZS, I've just had it in for a second service. It wouldn't charge before on Tesla charges. I tried it once when I went up to North Wales. I tried it at Flint Mountain. It wouldn't work. But before, we've talked about it on here. So I've just had it updated, had the software updated. I mentioned it to the dealer that it wouldn't charge on Tesla chargers, and the V2L also stopped working after 2 minutes. When you lock the car and turn it off, it switches off. So I asked them to update the software. When the answer I got back from the dealership was, well, yeah, Tesla shut those off so they don't work with Tesla chargers. And I said, listen, if you've updated the software, I'll try it out. But there's a bit of a comms issue that the dealers just don't, like you say, Miles, they don't know what the updates are. So my particular dealer didn't know there was an update for Tesla chargers. So hopefully they've done the updates now and it will work. I haven't had a chance to test it yet, but if they've done it, I'm sure it will work.
Yeah, I hope so. And also on vehicle to load, I understand that some of the cars shipped after January 2023 came with a faulty module that meant that V2L can't work unless that's replaced. And some people in the forum have been saying that if you've got one of these, your dealer will replace the module if you need to use that functionality. I don't know how many people use it, but it's obviously advertised as coming with the car. But so it should work.
Well, Tom, I'm still baffled with the radio. What the hell am I going to use V2L?
I do use it from time to time for power things when I'm away. Well, I'm not near a socket, obviously. And I've used it several times for that. Lawnmowers, electric lawnmowers and stuff like that. I've used it several times. Never been a problem. Never been a problem. It's slightly down on power over a normal 13-amp socket. Very, very slightly. It's hardly noticeable. Yeah. Very, very slight. But it works. And it's always works on both of ours, on the MG4 and the MG5. Not had a problem with it. Not had a problem at all.
I've noticed in the time, Tom, is there a couple more issues? Or?
Just a couple of general ones, really. So there's some battery management advice. There seems to be some conflicting messages coming out from MG. So we know that if you have one of the LFP battery cars, which I think is just the MG4 short range, as I'm not 100% sure whether the MG5 or the ZS use an LFP battery.
Standard range uses LFP, the MG4.
Okay, so that is.
Again, the MG5 range, which is LFP as well.
Okay, so if you have that, then obviously you just charge to 100% as often as you can, or as you want, tends to be the advice, so at least once a week. If you have an NMC battery, which is all the others, then the recommendation that had been published previously with MG was once a month do 100% charge to balance the battery and stick to 80% or so normally for best long battery life, but have the long range trip charge to 100% when you need to. Now, recently, there's a couple of other bits of advice that people have found in MG manuals or in the responses to MG UK inquiries. One is charging between 10 and 100% every 3 to 6 months. So this is about taking it all the way down to 10% and then doing a full charge up to 100%, which I believe may be about calibrating the battery curve. And the other is that some people seem to be giving the blanket statement to just charge to their car to 100% every week, regardless of whether whatever type you have. And there's quite a bit of confusion with people saying, well, should I be doing this? Shouldn't I be doing this? What's the current state? So any pearls of wisdom from the group?
So what I would say from experience with other EV brands, as well as MG, mm-hmm. is that the people on who work on MG customer services aren't necessarily battery experts, and they will not perhaps actually realize the difference between RFP and MC. And I know that sounds stupid because their customer service is for MG, but customer services from MG is the same as, like, you know, customer services at T-Mobile. They will know the different brands of handset that they do and all those stuff. They don't necessarily know that one's got 5G with a certain frequency and the other one's got 4G and whatever. So unless it's written down for them in a script, they probably won't know the difference. So I would say that with LFP batteries, my experience from LFP batteries is that they don't, because they have a much smaller voltage shift when the low to fully charged, that doing a 10% to 100% charge on an LFP once a month or so is beneficial because it helps the GOM basically calculate its range better. And it makes it so it's more predictable in terms of its actual estimate for a range. What can happen if you don't charge an LFP battery fully, and particularly if you don't take it low before then charging, is that you'll find that it's inaccurate in how it estimates the range. And sometimes I've known people who've, you know, they've had a 50% battery and then suddenly it's dropped to like 24% because basically it's just gone, oh crikey, actually the voltage is all shifted and this is not what I'm, and it goes to its lookup table of, you know, where it thinks things and being like, oh crikey, something's gone majorly wrong here with just a drop in temperature outside, particularly when it's been like down to, you know, sort of -7 or whatever over the colder weeks we've had recently. So I would recommend that, you know, with an LFP battery, you do 100% charges fairly regularly, and that you do a low to high probably on a monthly basis if you can. If you miss one month, you know, doesn't matter particularly, but as a, you know, for GOM purposes, GOM, guessometer is what I mean. For the range guess that's on the dashboard, that would probably be helpful. For NMC and lithium ion batteries, the standard practice is that we should keep them at 80%, well, between 20 to 80% is better. Between 40 to 60% is ideal. So if you're going, away for a long period of time, if you're going to go on a 3-4 week cruise, whatever, then leave it at, you know, sort of around 50% to be ideal, really, rather than leaving it fully charged. But if you're, again, wanting the battery to balance and give you a good range and good guesstimates of range, the best thing to do is to balance the battery, again, probably once a month. And if you want to do a deep discharge to recharge, again, that can help with the accuracy of that GOM calibration.
Miles, can I just add one thing to that? I've got a fair bit of experience with racing battery packs, etc., all NMC and ternary batteries. The important thing is, if you do charge, when you do charge to 100%, always try and balance charge at the same time, not just get to 100, finish the charge,
and switch it off.
Always try and balance it. And it's very difficult to know you've done that, especially if you're on a time of use tariff. So because the balancing takes next to no power, you don't have to do it in that 5-hour window. You can plug it in afterwards. It's using hardly any power to do that balancing aspect of it.
So I think
you're right, though.
Balance charge on an MG seems to be around sort of 300 watts it takes.
Yeah.
So it's 0.3 kilowatt. So yeah, you do your, if you do your major charge within the, I mean, I'm on a 7-hour time of use tariff, so I get midnight till 7 a.m. What I will tend to do probably is that, you know, normally me and my wife sort of take it in turns for charging our cars, or I've not charged mine for the last 2 days. She's charged hers 2 days ago. Neither of us charged last night, you know, so, but I'll run my car down a bit and then I'll stick it on a full charge. And then if it's only just had a brief bit of time to do the balance charge, then I'll probably charge over the weekend longer where I've got, I don't have to leave the house in the morning, you know, and let it do that way. It's, again, we're talking about the minutiae of how to get the most out of the battery. You can drive the car and charge it however you like. If you want the absolute maximum range out of it and you want it to, you know, and you not just on a 2-year contract tire, that you're actually, you know, you're invested in the vehicle and you want to keep it operating its best, then what are the strategies that me and Vince are talking about are the ways in which to maximize that. If you, but don't, you know, don't beat yourself up if you're not able to charge it to 100% or you're not able to leave it on a trickle charge for 6 hours or whatever. It's, you know, the car will still work. It's just that, you know, we're saying the ways in which you perhaps you might be able to, if you've got the ability to do this and charge at home, you may be able to improve the performance of the battery in the long term by doing these techniques.
I've noticed this with the, I've got the Zappi charger, and on the app, on the Zappi app, I can see it's charging away immediately at 7 kilowatts, 7.2 kilowatts, whatever it is, and then after several hours, whatever time it may be, it'll drop, and that window then can be anything between 15 minutes to an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It just depends on what the state of the battery is at the time when you first start it. If you let it run the full length, I only charge it up fully usually when I'm going on a trip the next day. If I know I'm going somewhere the next day, I'll charge it fully. But generally, I just take it up to about 80, 90%, leave it at that. But if I've not took it to a full charge for several weeks, which can happen, I'll notice this 300 line, or thereabouts 300, going across the Zappi screen can be anything from 15 minutes to an hour and a half, hour and 20 minutes. It can be anywhere in that region. It depends on what the state of the battery is when you start it off. Mm. And sometimes it doesn't do it at all. Sometimes I can take it up to 100%. And if I've had it up to 100%, perhaps 2 or 3 days or a week before, it won't balance.
Yeah.
It just goes to 100% and stops. And the 7.2 screen, where it's showing 7.2 across it, it just goes from 7.2 to zero and it stops. So it's not done any balancing at that time, probably because it doesn't need it. The battery management system will take care of it if you let it do it. The battery management will control it. So it's never a problem.
The new style ZS, when I charge up to 100%, the old style used to say, you've charged 100%, this may affect your braking, which obviously it does, because if you've got
regen.
Yeah, if you've got a high regen.
Yeah.
The new one doesn't, and I continually, we had a long journey at the weekend, got to the end of the street and went, oh my God, this thing isn't slowing down.
Yeah, I was going to say, the MG4 definitely warns you. It says regenerative
braking. Yeah, both of mine. They both warn you.
Yeah.
When you set off, you've got no regen braking. It tells you straight. And that can apply for like 3 or 4 miles until there's a little bit of room left in the battery to put the regen into it.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, best crack on, guys. Tom, is there a couple?
Yeah, last one then. Last one, quick one. I fear to mention it. The dreaded iSmart 2, version 2. So a lot of people had the app working, but then the new version came out, so they had a less than stellar experience. Now, that seems to have improved. There are new versions available, so I recommend if you haven't got the latest. The advice I've been given is to uninstall the app and reinstall it from scratch to make sure you get everything clean with the new version. But there are some conflicting experiences. So, again, back to one of the things that I took my car into the garage for was that I couldn't, with the new version 2, I can't remote heat the cabin. I can't select that option. It just gives me an error. And when I went in, the dealer, and I spoke to the technician who's going to be looking at it, he said, you've got to realize we don't have the app, we don't have the car, we don't have an MG4. We can't use the app. We can only plug in the diagnostics and send it to MG and see what they say if there's a software update available. But it's very hard for us to diagnose problems specifically with the app. And as yet, I haven't got a resolution. They have given me an update, but it hasn't worked. They're going to have another look at it when it goes back in.
If anyone has an issue,
invite any comments on the app.
If anyone's got any problem with iSmart, customer services at MG, and I've just berated them saying no, but they do have processes to follow to try and fault check this for you. The difficulty is, for dealers like you say, is that we don't have any access at all to the back end service system, so we can't see your accounts, we can't see what's going on communication wise. Whereas MG have access to those servers and they can escalate it through technical departments to be able to get to the point where they can see, you know, where your sending a request on the app now, and we can see whether it's pulling the car's ECU, and we can, you know, they can see those data lines. I believe that the preheating issue affecting the MG4 and the MGZS EV is a known fault with the current volume, the current software version of the app, and there will be an update shortly.
Right.
So the only reason I know that is because somebody else mentioned that they had that issue, and I asked MG.
Right.
So,
an update to the app itself rather than a car update.
Yeah. So it's a problem with the actual app itself. It's not communicating the right way with the server. So expect version 2.23 or whatever coming out. In terms of the faults that a lot of people had when we moved to version 2 of the app, which decided to roll out like the week before Christmas, which was a really handy time to do something.
Yeah.
99.9% of those people who said that they had problems couldn't get into the app. When we looked, because I spent a lot of time over Christmas, New Year trying to sort this out for people, 99% of those people were using the wrong username. Even though they were swore blind, they were definitely using the right username.
Right.
So, for example, I would say I'm 100% certain I set up my account with miles.roberts@chorleygroup.co.uk as my username. That was definitely 100%. That was it. I've put the password. It's not recognised. And then we'd go on I'd ask MG. They'd go on the server and they'd say, okay, so that VIN is bound to a mobile number starting 079-1941. I'd like, oh, that's my mobile number. And yeah, and so when I tried to use the mobile number as the log it as the username and then put a password in, suddenly it all works. So so 99% of the time people would, because the app, within the app now, there is on version 2, there is now a thing where you can go in on your settings and you can tell it that your mobile number and your email address are both the things, and you can actually link those two pieces of information on the app. But with version 1, you couldn't. So on version 1, you'd fill in that details and you'd say, this is my mobile number, this is my email address, whatever else. It wouldn't actually link that up, so it wouldn't use it as a username. But now it can do. But you've got to go in on the app. I've remembered this. Is it on there? I did this fairly recently. So when you go to your MG, my smart security settings. I don't know if you're going to be able to see this camera's gone. Basically, security settings is a mobile phone number is in there, and then email address is in there. And then it says, if you fill in your email and your phone number, you can log into the app using either. Well, actually says for both, but yes, it means for using either. So that is a new benefit that you can do with version 2 that wasn't applicable with version 1.
Yeah.
Okay, guys.
Thank you.
Tom, that's a power of work you've done there. Well done. I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
And I owe Les another apology. Hardly a podcast goes by without me apologising. Everybody's using their VTL for tumble drying and cutting the grass and everything, Les. So you've started a trend.
Not just me, Dave. Everybody does it.
I thought it was. Anyway, guys, we'll have to start thinking about winding this up. Last podcast, I think I mentioned that Stuart was working hard in the background to try and get the audio version available. That is now available. So just search MGEV's community podcast and your provider should have an audio version there. So that's it for the MGEV podcast tonight. Many thanks to the volunteer contributors. And also thanks very much to the moderators, Alb, A Real Human, Coulomb and Rolf. We couldn't do this without you guys, and we obviously the forum is well maintained and policed by you, so thank you for that. And of course Stuart in the background, who gets mentioned every now and then, he does exist, but he also does a fantastic amount of work. So guys, thanks very much. Les, great to see you with your fake tan, looking good.
Cheers, Dave, thanks a lot. Bye-bye, everybody. See you again.
Tom, power of work you put in today as well, so thank you very much. Always appreciated.
Thanks, Dave. See you soon.
Vince, good seeing you again, buddy.
Yeah, good to see you. Thank you very much for a good podcast.
And Miles, as ever, thank you very much. I love it in the chat. You've been answering folks' questions live and everything and sorting out the problems. So good seeing you again, buddy, and thanks for your input.
No worries, guys. And also, I've done a video about the Geneva Motor Show cars. It was supposed to be up tonight, but unfortunately, it's not rendered in time to actually get it up. So I'll post a link in the on the forum. So if people want information about the MG9, S9 and the IM-L6, they can get that. And if anyone's watching this and isn't on the forum, if you search on YouTube for Chorley Group MG, then you will find...
I watched your MG3 one today, this afternoon.
What's the MG3 video today, yeah.
Yeah, I watched that this afternoon.
All right, I'll have a look out for that. Great. Thanks, everybody. If you've enjoyed this podcast and found it useful, please click on the like button. Also, if you subscribe and click the notification bell, you'll get notified the next time we go live. I noticed one of the early comments was, where have you guys been? So apologies for that. But we have said in the past, when there's a lot to cover, we will cover it. But if there's nothing bubbling away, we'll step down. We'll be back soon, so please keep us updated with anything you wish to discuss. And we're very keen to welcome MGEV owners from outside the UK. Give us your experiences. And as ever, I know I keep saying this, please, we want to be as diverse as possible. Just that there's middle-aged guys sitting around the screen, we don't want that. Please, ladies, girls, whatever, please come on board and share your experiences. So that's it for tonight. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll see you the next time. Thanks, everybody.